The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast and on video is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yeah, we're good. We're good. We survived the rain.
Yeah. Because we had rain. I'm on the south coast. We had rain. It was going upwards towards Oxford Midlands area as well. And then there had another bout of rain. We missed that, but the Midlands and Oxford all had that. And I was listening to a guy on the weather forecast. And I thought, really? He said they had 2 months worth of rain in 2 hours. I thought, what? That is unbelievable. And I didn't see more flooding going on. But did you get any floods, John?
The roads around here became quite impassable. You'd need a Land Rover. The Land Rover's fine with it, but you'd have to be very careful with anything else. And so quite a few houses here were cut off.
I've seen about a couple of pictures of we talk about sort of electric vehicles a lot and EVs. There's pictures of Teslas apparently quite good in the rain floods. They can go straight through it. Is that right?
The EV cars, they're fantastic because they don't draw. They don't need air for an engine. And they're very well insulated from the weather because, of course, there's high voltages and a great deal of current in those batteries. So, in fact, when in Dubai recently, when they had some huge flooding, a lot of cars were destroyed, but all the electric vehicles were perfectly fine.
Well, according to Trump, he wouldn't want an electric, sort of boat, he said, because he said it would electrify the water around it. And he said, if there's a shark in the water, I think he was saying this, or you're on a boat that catches fire, now that's electric, I prefer to jump into the shark. I don't know how he's going to get votes off the back of that. He just got some tangents, fair play. He's selling some rubbish. In fact, he's selling crypto. I'm surprised he's not selling gold. He's selling crypto at the moment. He's selling watches, T-shirts to raise funds. It's unbelievable. And everything he's selling is the best out there. It's the best ever. This watch is one of the best ever made. Only 147 being produced. So I'm going to keep number one. So there we are. Anyway, let's talk about first and foremost about, you must be quite excited, John. Let me just get up the China indices. This is the Chinese indices. Because, of course, they've done some stimulus. And it looks like finally President Xi is taking it seriously, isn't he? He's starting to say, Pang Zhanggeng. Who was the guy that came out? Pang Zhanggeng was the guy who was, I apologize for pronunciation. I probably get complaints. I had a complaint last week about apparently dissing the Chinese people. I wasn't dissing the Chinese people. The government I was talking about, or life expectancy of Chinese. Life expectancy of Chinese people is below Western standards because they do still smoke a lot. It's still a big market for smokers. And that's what I was saying. There's a lot of, I'm not talking about the younger generation maybe, but the older generation, they're still big smokers, John, aren't they?
I believe so. I think it's a huge market for cigarette sales.
Philip Morris and all that, they're doing very well in the Far East and China especially. But look at this. This is a CSI 300. These are the biggest 300 stocks, and if you scroll out, you can see what a dismal performance has been since 2021. You can see it's gone down from February 2021. The indices has dropped by 45% since 2021. But in the last few days, because of Pang Gongchen, which I think is the prime minister, I don't know which one he is, or is it something to do with them, I was reading the week. But that's gone up recently from the low there. It's done 15% in the last four or five trading sessions. Explain why that is, John. What's happening in China?
Well, China decided to stimulate the market, and they decided to put stimulus in on a whole range of different levels. So they cut interest rates in China by 50 basis points. So that was a good beefy cut. They then they reduced the short-term seven-day RRP rate to 1.5% from 1.7. They added they released $71 billion worth of funding for brokers and insurance companies so they could go and buy equities. That's what's run up your CSI 300 index. They then put in another 142 billion of liquidity into the banking system. I mean, the numbers are huge. I mean, we have seen bigger numbers from China in the past, but what they've said is they are going to carry on, effectively supporting various elements of the economy. So property is a really big one because their property market has been collapsing around their ears. That's not good. They need to re-stimulate construction. So what they've said is they're going to they have this white list of projects. So they're expanding that white list for special government loans to be increased, new projects to be started on spare and available land. So they're restarting that market. There's also a comment in there which I assume relates to the one-child policy. Now they won't want to talk about that. But they scrapped the one-child policy, which they had for many, many years, I think decades. And so, you know, people don't want to buy flats that only have one spare bedroom. So I think they're having to reconfigure quite a lot of these buildings so that people actually want them. Because if you want to have a family with three or four kids, you're going to need more than one spare bedroom. And so I think a lot of this is about making stuff more affordable, helping families get into new houses and making sure that those apartments, because it's generally apartments, are big enough for growing families. And again, the state is trying to encourage all of that because they realize they have a demographic problem coming down the line. You know, having had this one-child policy for so many years, they're now running out of young people to replace the generation that are looking to retire. Of course, remember, they've recently increased the retirement age, which has upset quite a lot of the population just all on its own. So anyway, there's a whole lot of stuff coming in. They're also looking at a whole raft of social security type issues, insurance, management of pensions, pensioners, childcare, education, healthcare, retire, you know, all sorts of things. This is the kind of stuff I'd quite like to see our government doing, but sadly, we have a more democratic system.
Sadly? What do you mean, sadly? Well, just sadly. What do you want? Like President Xi just up there and voted in, just doing what he wants?
No, well, but there are times when I look at the Chinese system and think, oh, gosh, they do seem to be doing rather better than we are. But, of course, it's... Look, every economy has its moment when the music stops.
Are they? I mean, they have sort of 1.5 billion people, and I'm assuming the majority, a lot of them, I don't know, the standard of living. I mean, what is the standard of living there? It's below ours, isn't it? I mean, because if you understand why companies can afford to, you know, outsource production or factories to China, it's because they pay them a lot less. And of course, standard living a lot less. So, you know, once that catches up, it'd be interesting to see, not yet, maybe decades, but, you know, with improving standard living, obviously you have to start paying people more. You know, that's when I suppose, you know, the competitiveness really comes in. But you know what's very interesting about this? So we've talked about China, and of course, we know that it's very effective on resource companies because China pretty much, you know, second largest economy in the world, but the biggest builder pretty much, and they are. You know, they gobble up pretty much half of all resources around the world. So when they're weak, you know, the resource prices are weak. But to draw is very interesting. Watching CNBC yesterday, David Tepper, who's a billionaire investor in America, came on CNBC and he said he's buying everything, China, everything. And this is the guy here. Everything China rated on Beijing easing. And he was saying that it's very unusual. And not only did they stimulate, but they're saying they will do more. They will do more to do almost do whatever it takes to get the Chinese economy going again. So he's seeing this just at the start. And he said, he said everything's Chinese. And they said to him, so what are you buying? He said, everything. So all the so big, you know, the stocks, I think, listed in the US, and you know, it's Chinese. He's buying it all, he said, and even obviously dipping into China. But yeah, so it could be a turning point. Like I said, they are down 45% since 2021, the main index. But that, you know, you can't ignore something like that. That kind of rally, I mean, it's rallied to the previous high there in May, but this is almost straight up. And when you often see that, and it may have to come back a little bit. That marks a bottom in my mind. Whenever you see has that sort of breakneck rise over the next 3 to 4 days, it tends to be the start of a rally. You know, and it may have to go sideways for a little bit and consolidate. But I think this is the start of something positive for all global markets, because, you know, like I said, they are, it's them in America, the two big boys on the block. And if, you know, two big engines of global commerce, and if one of them is spluttering, it doesn't help. But now, if they fire that up, it's really going to help, isn't it? Generally, globally. You know?
And we've seen China do a lot of destocking so far this year. They go into what's described as a restocking cycle over the summer. And from what we saw, that restocking cycle was delayed and delayed. I think partially because they were expecting, you know, everyone's been waiting for the US Federal Reserve to cut rates. When they cut rates, the dollar is expected to weaken. So what do you want to do? Do you want to buy copper at a high dollar price, or do you want to buy copper at a lower dollar price? So everyone's been waiting for that dollar for the dollars to weaken. As that has happened, they've sort of rushed back into the market buying copper and gold and other commodities. And so we're now seeing that new momentum. We're now seeing a little bit of, we're now seeing the end of the destocking and the beginning of the restocking again. And as a result, we've seen copper go from $9,000 to over $10,000 a ton. And that's actually great news for copper miners. The gold price is fantastic news for gold miners, because that seems to be breaking new highs every few days.
Yeah. Look at that. The copper is exactly the same as the CSI index, the CSI 300. You know, so it rallied in May, in May, exactly the same, came back down, and now it pretty much, it's not been as crazy breakneck up, but it's pretty much followed the same kind of pattern as the Chinese index.
So well, they're very different markets, but they're moving for the same reasons at this point in time.
Mm, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I assume you keep an eye on some miners and explorers, John. I've been tired all of a sudden. Sorry. Have the big miners been moved? And well, I know the oil producers have gone down, but the miners wise, Shell and BP, because of weakness in Saudi. But what about resource companies, big miners? Have they been rallying? And has junior explorers been rallying or not?
It's difficult to know what the junior explorers have been doing. If anything, I think they've still been falling in the last week. But the big miners, they're up. Well, BHP's up 11% on the week. Rio's is up 13%. Glencore up 11%. Anglo American up 14%. Antofagasta up 13%. So it's been a good week for those companies, and definitely a decent turnaround.
Yeah. Okay, Glencore. Yeah, they're all sort of following that sort of blip up there. We need to see where they go from here. Okay, you know, it's very interesting. The thing is, in China at the moment, I assume you have, you know, a lack of confidence amongst the consumer, don't you? I mean, if you look at what they've gone through and the money they lost on, you know, first of all, you know, property was the thing they trusted in. And now the property market's almost collapsed, and it's like slow crash territory. Huge amounts of debt going on, and so they've been burned on property. They certainly don't trust the stock market as much as they did property. So, you know, will they invest in the stock market? But will they spend more now? Will they be convinced to spend more, or are they just a bit worried? You know.
Well, I think this is why the government has made the statements that it's been making, in that it's trying to recreate confidence. So that for every dollar that they spend, or every renminbi they spend, the market will add to that. And they know that. And, you know, governments around the world are making these sorts of statements, saying that, yes, for every dollar of stimulus, they want the markets to come in and add more. So that everybody's trying to leverage off what they want to put in and try and make, you know, give it a bigger impact. This is why the Federal Reserve went for a 50 basis point cut in the week, because they wanted to have greater impact.
I found that very odd, actually, that they went for 50 basis. I didn't see that happening. I thought, you know, Jerome Powell is very measured, and if the plan is working, you know, why would they go 50 basis points? Because normally that's only reserved for times of economic stress and worry. And I'm thinking, they're looking at something that we're not seeing.
They're looking to stimulate jobs growth. They've decided to forget about inflation for now. They think that's under control. They're stimulating jobs growth. If they'd just gone for a 25 basis point cut, the market would have said ho-hum and just carried on. Whereas with a 50 basis point cut, that had real impact. People said, okay, we've got a decent cut here. maybe we'll get a 25 basis point cut later on in the year, maybe we won't. But this means this shows us that the Fed means business. The Fed wants to stimulate growth. They want to have a growth environment. They need to have a growth environment because they want to carry on competing with China.
Yeah. Well, I think they're was it predicting 100 basis points or 150 before the end? I think it's 100 basis points before the end of the year. So they're going for at least two more cuts. Okay, so let's talk about some individual companies, John. What's happening news-wise? Anything out there?
Well, in relation to China, because China is pulling levers all over the place to try and create a bit of growth. And as
that sounds like almost a chaotic approach. Come on, let's try to pull some levers here. Come on, anything working? No.
Justin, it is totally like that. You've nailed it.
It's like someone almost putting a, the old-fashioned signal boxes at a very busy railway junction, and they haven't changed the tracks in some way. And they have no idea which one the train's going. Is there A, B? Which one are pulling? Anyone? Just try all of them. That's what it's
Justin,
like.
The only thing you lacked from that was a cigarette hanging out of your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. And I can't do that though because I get complaints and a Chinese accent. You know, I don't do that anymore.
So China introduced some new strict rules on vanadium. They did it a few years ago. Now they've published another set of rules. They discovered that 23% of rebar made in China was actually not conforming to the regulations. And that's pretty serious because if you have a problem with a building, let's say there's an earthquake, and they do get big earthquakes in China, then suddenly you have schools and hospitals collapsing. That's no good. So they brought in some new requirements. That means extra vanadium. Somebody calculated that it would stimulate another 120,000 tons of nitrogen or nitrovan or nitrogen in vanadium to be used, and that's important. So that should be very good for the vanadium market. That should be good for companies like Bushveld Minerals.
They certainly need it. Bushveld, they've been up against it. But look at the chart on that. Cool. It's a nightmare. It just keeps coming down after that huge rise back in, what was it? 4,200% rise from 2016 to 2018. Wow. That's all you need is one of those in your life. And, put a bit of money into that. It's come down back to where that was. And they've been having problems with, debt and all kinds of stuff. But it's hardly moved, though, Bushveld.
We act as nomad and broker to the company. It they have had a very tough time of late, and they've even had to sell some assets, and it's just one of those things. It's an extraordinarily tough market. But now that the Chinese are hopefully going to conform to their new regulations, then that will stimulate new demand. They also announced in the week that they're going to build a very big vanadium redox battery, another one of these big batteries, and I don't know how much that vanadium that's going to consume, but these battery systems consume a lot of vanadium pentoxide material, and that will also have an impact on the market. So when you add the two together, the vanadium battery and the requirement for nitrovan, which is actually a Bushveld product, that's a trademark name, I think. So, yeah, hopefully happy days will be here again, but of course, they're not.
So, what's the battery for? Yet. I'm just saying that it's putting a big battery in the middle of,
Will be a grid scale battery. Because the vanadium redox batteries are generally larger scale. So, they're good for that sort of. Lithium batteries are generally seen as good for shorter duration power supply. Vanadium redox batteries are seen as much better for sort of 8+ hours of power supply at a grid scale, but look, they're not cheap to put in. The vanadium in those batteries is very expensive, and that's what's held back that market in recent years. And of course, Bushveld Minerals has developed an electrolyte plant in South Africa, so I don't suppose the Chinese will be asking them to provide the electrolyte for this battery, but you never know. I mean, they are there. They are capable of producing electrolyte for vanadium batteries as required.
Yeah, and vanadium, apparently they do last longer, they're safer as well, aren't they? So less chance of catching fire. They're more expensive, but the life cycle on them are better. They don't have to renew them as often. In fact, talking about that, today, Invinity Energy Systems, who produce vanadium flow battery storage, come out with interim results. They did a profit warning a few weeks back, and the CEO stepped down. But they did like 14 million in revenue last year, in the half year. This year, 1.6. They did raise 50 million though. It's like they were 50 million market cap. They raised 50 million. 25 million of that came from the British sort of UK investment bank, whatever it is, the government sort of innovation fund, whatever. But yeah, but it's almost the demand has been pushed out, they said. So it is grid scale. And you understand those kind of projects are very lumpy and they can be delayed. So
I think while we're on the subject, we should talk about the fact that solar plants and wind farms, of course, but mainly relating to solar plants, are looking at adding a lot of battery systems, because there are certain points in the day when, yeah, if you're running a solar farm, for example, you don't get paid anything very much for your electricity at certain points of the day when there's a surplus of electricity in the system. So the clear thing for these guys to do is to put in a battery system, a grid scale battery system, store that power for when the power price is much higher, and then combine the two. So there are a lot of solar farms looking to do that. One of the things that's held them back so far is the computer systems within the UK grid network are, shall we say, subpar.
I've heard that. National grid, isn't it? Maybe they're not really working very well. They can produce electricity, they can't get into the grid because of national grids. And they're spending lots of money. Also, I mean, it seems like we need a big upgrade, massive. And the government needs to step in here. This is where the government needs help with billions of upgrades. I've also heard, you know, recently that there's so many plans, investment plans, that are sitting on planning officers' desks. And there was the boss of SSE who, for 23 months, there's like a wind farm thing going on, I think in Scotland somewhere. And he said, 23 months we've been waiting for an answer back from the planning, and we keep, you know, hassling. So, and this is what, and you realise now when Labour talk about growth and unlocking planning, there can be a huge amount of growth just stimulated by speeding up the planning process, because there's so many projects out there, big ones. I had another guy, he was a chairman of, he was a chairman and on the boards of many companies, but one of them was a company where they were going to spending 400 million in investment around Cambridge. And he said, that's just sitting on the desk waiting for planning. And he said, you know, we can get that, we're ready to go on that. Money's there, everything's there. And so you understand there's so many planning applications for big projects just sitting there, you know, with local planning officers. No, I don't think we'd do that. Just pushing it back, you know. They, come on, move it on, you know.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think you should team up with Jeremy Clarkson and do a show.
Yeah, but it's nuts, isn't it? It's like people say, oh, we're not going to conquer the UK. We're not going to conquer the UK. If you flew over the UK, which most people do, you know, on summer holidays, or whether you fly over the UK, you land in Heathrow or whatever you land, or Gatwick, or whatever you land in the UK, you see the UK is 97% green. It's you know, it's 2% is concreted. And that's not going to change, you know. Even if you add 1% to it, it's a huge amount of development, 1%. And it'd still be largely 96% or 7% greenery. And so people are worried about this. Now, you talk about jobs and, you know, and having people raising standards of living and all that stuff. Just get on with it, you planning officers. They've got a little bit of power. Yeah, no, they've got this, you know, a multi-billion pound corporation asked them for planning, and they just see that as power. No, I've knocked them back. Sitting in a little office, you know, driving a little car here, a little house, and a wife. Just, you know, do you understand? By doing that, you've spoiled, you know, the potential to create wealth in your area many times over. You know, you're employing people who will go and spend in shops. The tax take will increase massively. And you've got the little planning officers. No, not going to do that. No. Get rid of them. Get rid of local planning. Because we're never going to just concrete UK. It's never going to happen. You know, but you just think these little people with their little bit of power in their office are just stopping so much wealth creation in this country. Phenomenal.
Justin, you've clearly been watching Clarkson's Farm recently. So.
No, I've watched it for ages. It's good, though. I haven't watched it for ages. But, yeah, it's sad, isn't it, that these people, I suppose people have to have a purpose in life. And these people see other people doing very well or business doing very well. They just have to, I think maybe they're a little bit envious or jealous in their small world and saying, no, I'm going to use my power to stop this. Regardless of just saying yes, do you know how many people you're putting out of a job, or how many jobs you're preventing, how much wealth creation you're preventing. It's phenomenal. Anyway, sorry, what are we talking about? Bushveld. What, anything else, John? What's next?
I think it's worth looking at Anglo-Asian mining. They had an increase in the mineral resource at the Garadagh copper project or copper mine in Azerbaijan. But they're a gold and copper producer. At the moment, they're more gold than copper, which is great because the gold price keeps hitting new highs.
Yeah, gold is mad. I did say a while back, we've been saying this, I think it's going to 3,000 and it keeps edging up all the time. Phenomenal.
Yeah, we're certainly heading towards your $3,000 an ounce target.
Look at gold.
Yeah. The Indian government cut tariffs on gold. They had a 9% tariff. So they cut that back. That stimulated new demand. We know the Chinese had been busy buying gold earlier on in the year, and the Chinese have been buying not just physical gold, but gold futures, gold ETFs, you name it. I think they were buying it from what I've read. Then certain people calculated that the Saudi Arabian central bank had been buying gold. So when you add it all together, I think a lot of central banks have been selling dollars and buying gold just because they were waiting for the Federal Reserve to cut rates, and they're just getting ahead of that, and that's perfectly normal and understandable. So it has led the gold price higher, and I think there are more interest rates to come from the Fed, so gold prices will likely go higher again.
Yeah, and literally when you realize that these governments are buying gold because the dollar's getting weaker, you want a hard asset that's going to appreciate. And other governments saying, well, the Saudis are buying, are they? Yes, we should buy. And the Chinese are buying. How many other governments are we saying, the Russians, they're all buying. Just buy some, all of it. And I just think, is that said, where you get loads of governments buying gold, they would have that mentality, just you've got to buy gold, because there's only a certain amount of it, finite amount of gold. Keep buying it. And I think
there's always a herd mentality to these things.
Yeah.
Once something develops a bit of momentum, it tends to go. I should also say we act as Nomad and broker to Anglo-Asian as well. That's why we know the company so well.
Yeah, well, if you look back, they've had a cracking run previously, didn't they? What was that time there? It went from, from 3 pence a share up to 1.69.
Well, you're going back a long way.
That was from 2016, 4 pence a share, to 2019. That's 3 years. That's a phenomenal rise, isn't it? So
that's why we buy mining shares, Justin.
Yeah. So you're talking about that's a 4,000% rise. That's a bit more under the radar than Bushveld. A lot of people were aware of what Bushveld will do. But Justin,
you have to remember to buy low and sell high. That's the secret.
Yeah. A lot of private investors do the opposite. But that's starting to make a move, it looks. But
plenty of institutions do the opposite as well, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I know. I've talked to it's amazing. I do talk to people in the investment community, and some of the stocks they talk about privately, I think, are you kidding? is that something that's rallied like crazy and they're starting to buy? You're doing the opposite of what you should be doing there. Yeah,
that's the momentum trade.
Yeah, but then they get the wrong way around. Okay, so Anglo-Asian or anything else, John?
Sovereign Metals were busy speaking at a conference at the UN General Assembly. But the key thing, great place to go and speak, was that they were talking in a panel with Rio Tinto. Now, Rio Tinto are an investor in Sovereign Metals. We mentioned this before because we're Nomad and broker to Sovereign. Rio's have been giving them a huge amount of help and technical support on the new rutile and graphite mining project in Malawi. I think that's all going really well. And I think Rio's are even referring to Sovereign Metals' Cassia project in presentations on their titanium project. So Rio's in the week had a site visit to their Canadian operations, and the presentation was showing their ambitions to produce their titanium dioxide output in Canada. And they expect the market to increase quite significantly. I think increase from 7.7 million tons to 9.5 million tons. That's big. That's a compound average growth rate of 3% a year. So they're really looking for strong growth in the titanium market. Most of that's for paint, for pigments, you see, where the titanium is used. Titanium takes the paint, means the paint is less translucent and effectively gives it more color in. So it's a very important commodity. It tends to go up in line with global GDP. in terms of demand, and there isn't so much of the feedstock around.
Yeah. Well, I think they were also tipped recently, weren't they, on the Midas column in the
Daily Mail. Yes, Midas, yeah.
But let's just say, John, I know Joanne, she's been on the podcast before, the writer of that, but you know, John's been talking about this way before that. You hit it here first, yeah? What else?
All about the timing. So anyway, we act, as I say, we act as no man of broker. Yeah, and last but not least, Kodal Minerals. Again, where we act for the company. Well, we're a broker to Kodal. They updated on their Bougouni project in Mali. They are going to be the first London-listed lithium project company to get into production. That should either be very late this year or probably first production starts to roll down to the ports in Q1. Hopefully January, I would have thought. And yeah, everything's going well. We met with the Kodal board and the a couple of guys from Hainan Mining.
Hainan.
Yeah, the Chinese.
I can't help saying that when I hear that. No, I don't know why I say that. When I hear that, Hainan, I can't help say that. But why now is the share price coming off a bit when you've got this production? That's always the case, isn't it? It's better to travel sometimes, and you get the rumours about it's going to happen, what's happening. And then when you start going to production, it settles down. What's going on here?
If I was going to look, I think the share price should be going up. But if I was to look for a reason for it coming off, the management are in discussions with the government about changing the mining convention. That's the sort of fiscal terms between Kodal and the government. The new government of Mali, which has been in place for a couple of years, introduced a new mining code in 2023, whereby the government can take their stake to 30% of the project. So they would buy an addition. So they get a free carry on 10% of the project under the mining convention. But then they will be able to acquire an extra 20% of the project at terms to be agreed with Kodal Minerals. So that that's a slight negative, but it's much better that they sign a convention and actually start production from the project. And I don't think there's going to. I think relations are good between Kodal and the government, and I think that's I think that will work very well. We do also see lithium prices turning from here. The quality of the spodumene or the spodumene concentrate from Mali is said to be very, very good. So, okay, they haven't produced the concentrate yet, but an awful lot of test work has been done. And the reason why Hainan Mining put $100 million into the joint venture for this project is they really want this particular type of feedstock because they want to increase production of lithium hydroxide at their refinery in China. So this is very important to them. They are going to pull out all the stops to make it work. A lot of the equipment is already in Mali. The shipments have been going in. I think there's another two ships to arrive. First one carries electrical equipment. The second one carries, power generation equipment. That will all be in there in the next couple of months. They bolted all together and hey presto, you'll have a proper mine. So we're very excited about that.
Is it that easy? Hey presto, done. There we are.
Exactly. On top of that, Kodal also has a series of gold projects which they're working on concurrently, and they're also looking for more spodumene in Mali and probably in the Ivory Coast, I would expect. So look, I think Kodal actually, I think, could become a much bigger company from here.
Yeah, well, you mentioned lithium because it's going to turn. What time frame? Because they're looking. What is this down to China or what? What I mean, why is it? I mean, it did rally by a lot.
We had an interesting discussion with the Chinese guys on this, and they are more expert than we are at the Chinese market for spodumene. They definitely think we're at the bottom of the market for spodumene prices and lithium carbonate prices and all those. The different types of lithium chemicals. They see it going up from here. They see lithium demand rising at 20% a year in China. Now, China is producing an awful lot of electric vehicles. Yes, yeah. They're going to have a problem selling these vehicles into the US, Canada, and probably into Europe. But they are going to sell them all over the world. They might not be selling the big expensive cars into the West, but they're going to sell an awful lot more smaller, cheaper vehicles all over the world. I mean, India is going to be an enormous market. Now, again, India might not be buying so many cars from China because they themselves, they like to support their own domestic industries on not just electric vehicles, but on everything else. But there's so many other markets around Southeast Asia, around the developing countries, Brazil, Latin America, where they are going to buy Chinese EVs. And where they're not going to try and develop their own electric vehicle manufacturing industries, although Chinese EV manufacturers are building plants elsewhere in the world. They're building a few in Mexico. They're building stuff in Morocco. They're even looking to build some electric vehicle plants in Europe. So there's an awful lot of moving parts. There's a lot going on here. And I think the one thing we can be sure of is that lithium demand is going to rise. Because it's not just electric vehicles, but there are going to be a lot of grid-scale lithium-ion battery packs installed by solar power producers. The reason why I think they'll install a lot of lithium-ion batteries is because the cost has been coming down and down and down. We are sub $100 per kilowatt hour on that. Per kilowatt of capacity. The lithium-ion battery packs can react very quickly to surges in demand. So if the grid suddenly says, right, we need an extra 100 megawatts of power and we need it delivered within the next few milliseconds, your lithium ion battery will be able to supply that if you built in enough capacity. So that's what the solar guys are looking for.
Yeah. And not only that, it says every that's Atlantic lithium price, by the way, and they're down, probably hit by a weak lithium price and the Mali thing. The funny thing is, it's not just cars as well. Everything's been electrified, isn't it? I mean, do you know what? I'll give you an example. We our garden of a new house here, it's surrounded by some lovely trees, big old oak, beech, or whatever the silver birches. But they dropped some leaves now. Starting to get. We didn't realize when you moved to. We've got this house thing. There's so much garden equipment we bought. But part of that is I've started doing it with a rake, but it's hard work. I don't mind it. It's good exercise. But it's starting to come down every day now. And if you want to keep the garden nice, get rid of the leaves. So we thought, we had these guys around looking at the garden. We need to move some plants and trees and smaller ones. But it's when you need to get a proper leaf blower, a proper one, absolutely. And so... steel, we got that. And we looked at the leaf blowers, proper ones you put on your back, industrial ones. And looked at the petrol one, it's like about £400, which is expensive leaf blower, but you'd be out there every day doing it. You've got to have a good work. So we looked at the electric version, right? The guy said £1,000 for the battery on its own. We said, what? Are you kidding me? What? Just the battery. And then you have to buy the electric thing on top of that. But with the petrol one, just that's all in, £400. So that's got to come down a little bit. But everything will go that way eventually, won't it? Everything will be electrified,
It is all going that way, Justin. And in 10 years' time, we'll look back at this era and we'll say, why did anyone ever buy a car with an internal combustion engine in it? Why did anyone ever buy garden machinery which wasn't battery powered?
Because at the time you had no option, I suppose, because the cost of it and it was more efficient. But I know what you mean. It'll be like that. I think the same will be for meat, John.
I think the key thing is the battery for that leaf blower is very expensive today. You wait 5 or 10 years.
That's the thing.
That battery will be a third of the weight and will last twice as long. And it'll be a tenth of the price.
Yeah, same as EVs, isn't it? That's the thing that's holding us back, the lack of adoption. That's why Chinese are winning on this, because the EVs are a lot cheaper than everything else. And once you get that, tipping point, critical mass of people, most people have it, that will drive the cost down massively. And like you say, and then when you get, like literally, when you can drive as far in an EV as you can in a petrol car and the cost's the same, it won't be a question of it'll be a no-brainer, because you can charge in your house pretty much. If you've got solar panels, you can pay for the charge for that, all that stuff. And it'll be, but that's the thing. It's the stumbling block of the cost. and the performance.
Justin, it's horses for courses right now.
Electric. I'm not going back to horses.
Electric vehicles are fantastic for small city runarounds. If you want to buy a small, lightweight vehicle for running around the city, that's absolutely brilliant. If you want to buy a heavy duty, you know, comfortable saloon car that will take you from here to Manchester, for example, with the air conditioning running, then I'm afraid you're still on petrol or diesel. It's as simple as that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Marvellous stuff. Cheers, John, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you, Justin.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.